and welcome to episode 241 of the Bust Ball Podcast. This week we'll be poring over all things Scottish football, including Rangers' bounce back victory at Livingston, Motherwell making it three league wins in a row, Hibs claiming victory after a traumatic week, and all other happenings across Scottish football at the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined by everyone's favourite Highlander, Johnny Clark. Hello, Johnny.
Thanks, Lewis. I'm actually from Murrayshire, but I'll take the compliment anyway. Delighted to be here.
Well, it's Chuchtalan to us. And I'm equally as delighted to be joined by Ayrshire's finest, Callum Fisher. How are you doing, Fisher?
Well, thanks very much. That's, considering there's a couple of us for Ayrshire to be called the finest, that's quite the compliment, Lewis. I'm doing good, mate, yourself?
I'm good, Fisher. Aye, well, you're the Ayrshire contingent that's on the night, so you're the finest. Finest for this show, yeah. Anyway. So, without further ado, we'll begin with Rangers' 3-0 victory at Livingston, you'll be pleased to know, Fisher. With Ryan Jack, Kent and Morelis all getting in the score sheet. A convincing win for Gerrard's men after their disappointing loss to Killie during the week. What did you make of it, Fisher?
I thought it was pretty much the perfect performance. We looked really, really comfortable within the game. Dominated on the ball, played some really nice stuff going forward. Defensively, were very sound. And particularly when you contrast with not only the game on Wednesday against Kilmarnock, but the first game at the Tony Macaroni this season against Livingston. It really is a world of difference. We were a lot better today, a lot more confident. And I thought we deserved it. It could have been more as well, which is always nice. Obviously got a bit of luck for Ryan Jack's first goal, but obviously we had a howler go against us during the week. So I think the change in formation back to a 4-3-3, I think McCrory coming back in was massive for us as well. And as I say, just thought all round really, really good performance.
It must have been nice to see us get a win with a few goals, because you know a lot of Rangers games this season, it's been the odd chance here or there. They've been sort of strong at the back and just kind of eating games out. It must have been nice to go and see you sort of batter a team that have been really, really good this year.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Livingston prior to this had only conceded about 6 goals at home or something ridiculous like that. You know, they're notoriously really, really difficult to break down, as we found out earlier in the season, as I mentioned. So to do it, and then to do it with, you know, relatively comfortably, should I say, was really, really impressive. I think as the first half went on, you're looking at it going, we're having a lot of the ball and we are playing well, but you know, we really do need this goal. And as I say, Ryan Jack scored it with a bit of luck, but the important thing was in the second half that we picked up where we finished off in the first.
What do you think of the title race, Fisher? Sorry to interrupt you there. What do you think?
That's all right.
After obviously Killie during the week, you'd have been all full of confidence after the old Fum game. You must have been a wee bit deflated after Killie during the week there. What do you think it's kind of at now, sitting 3 points behind with that game in hand?
I always said after the old Fum game was great. It was brilliant to finally beat them in the way we did. We should have beaten them by more. But I said that these two games were crucial, and obviously as good as today was, and as impressed as I was with the team, I think it was one of those games where it was like there wasn't a player really below 7 out of 10 in my opinion. But it's a bit of a strange situation when it's a big contrast tonight, feeling like I am tonight compared to Wednesday. I think in terms of the title race, there's no doubt that we are in one. We just need to try and find the consistency, and that's been our issue all season. You know, we can beat Celtic, we can play them off the park, we can win comfortably today, but then equally, we can't put away Dundee when they're down to 10 men. We can't go away to Kilmarnock and beat them after going a goal in front. We've lost late equalisers, obviously, to Hibs at Ibrox, Aberdeen at Pittodrie, and those are the games that are going to cost us. We've got a kind of decent run of fixtures coming up. And obviously, St Mirren at home, we've got Aberdeen away, which will be a big game, then we've got St Johnstone at home, Hamilton away, and then Dundee at home. So we can win every single one of those games. Obviously Aberdeen's been a kind of bogey team so far this season, but I'm confident that we can take, if we play how I know we can and how we've shown today, we can take maximum points from those next 5 games. It's a big ask, obviously. But I think we are in a title race. We've shown when we put pressure on Celtic that we can get the right results. And obviously the fact that we've got that massive monkey off our back in terms of actually beating Celtic in 90 minutes is huge. It's just important we get, if we're consistent enough, then anything can happen. I hate to say it, but I still think Celtic will win the league. But if we can get the consistency going into the kind of final stretch of games in the season, then it's all to play for. And we've got the, I've said this all along, we've got the players to win the league. We just need to, if we play how I know we can and go on this run, then it's definitely achievable. But as I say, at this point in time, I need to see it to believe it, if you get me.
Aye. And then, Johnny, we've been used to seeing Livingston be well set up, physical, hard to beat this season. In the second half, I think as Fisher will tell us there, Rangers were pulling them all over the place. They could probably have had a couple more goals, to be honest. In your mind, were Livingston poor, or was it just Rangers being in top form and that's what they can do to teams?
I was actually at the house, I've only watched the highlights. But from what I can tell from watching highlights and listening to Fisher there, it was, well, I wouldn't say a worrying performance from Livingston, but Rangers completely dominant, they're completely the better team. And I think they've showed their quality, which, in all fairness, from the outside looking in, and Fisher, you feel free to sort of correct me, but I mean, I could probably list a few times this season I've watched Rangers away from home. Kelly, Dundee is the one that really springs to mind. And they've lacked creativity a lot, and they've struggled to break teams down. Livingston away exactly early in the season, in fact, is a perfect example. I think Livy won that one 1-0, if I remember rightly. So it is, I suppose it's something that they've struggled to do this season. So it's important that they've managed to do that. From a Livy point of view, that's four games in a row they've been defeated in. And it's all sort of, I wouldn't say it's gone pear-shaped, but they've scored twice in six games since they beat Hearts 5-0. And they've picked up 2 points in those five games. You know, it started extremely well, and I think they're just kind of, I mean, Livingston are obviously comfortably safe, and that's objective complete for Livingston. It's been a great season, kind of no matter what happens in the last 15 games. So you've got to look at it from that perspective, and this will be remembered as a very good campaign for them. You only have to look at the fact that they've got a positive goal difference. I mean, that tells you a lot, and the three teams at the bottom of the league are miles adrift of them. So it's, as I say, it's objective complete for Livingston, but they are just going through a bit of a difficult run at the moment that they'll want to put to an end. When they play Motherwell, your boys, next week.
Yeah, they do indeed. You kind of hinted there that you think the bubble might have burst almost a wee bit at Livingston. You think the Hibs job might be one that interests Gary Holt if he's offered it?
I wouldn't have Gary Holt in the picture, to be honest with you. He wouldn't be a candidate I'd be thinking of if I was a Hibs fan. That's no disrespect to him. I'm not really sure, to be honest. I just don't think he's a Hibs standard manager. That might be quite harsh. I'm not sure what you guys would think about that, but I'm not sure.
I wasn't sure. I'd seen him linked with it. I know he's not one of the favourites, but I think any sort of, obviously technically they've still got a man in the job in Neil Lennon, but any sort of wee shortlist, yeah, that you've seen so far, I've seen that his name usually kind of crops up at the bottom, that Hibs might take a wee fancy to him, but no, I couldn't see it happening either, to be honest with you, Johnny. What about you, Fisher? Can you see that happening?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think whatever you think about Neil Lennon in the context of Scottish football, he's a kind of big name manager, if you like. No disrespect to Gary Holt, but I think Hibs would probably want to aim a bit higher, given, you know, they have kind of tailed off this season. When you look at the fact that they're sitting 13 points behind Rangers and Kilmarnock in kind of joint setting the third, if you like. So I think Hibs will probably aim their sights a wee bit higher at us. I think Gary Holt could go into Hibs and do a good job, to be fair. But I just think they'll maybe want to aim their sights a bit higher, as I said, just on Livingston that we're talking about as well. For me, I think it's just kind of reverting to the mean, if you like. They've had a fantastic start to the season. As Johnny said, they're comfortably safe. But I don't think anybody ever thought it was going to last the entire season. And I think they're just going through a dip in form that you probably could have anticipated. I still think, as I say, they'll be safe. And it wouldn't surprise me if they pick it up again kind of in the final run-in of the season, but I think, as I say, it's just Livingston. They've punched above their weight to get into the league and then continue to do so in the first kind of half of the season. But I think we're just seeing where Livingston are, you know, kind of in terms of their playing squad and things like that at the moment. But as Johnny said, it's still a fantastic season for them. But I don't think it's anything major. I just think it's this is how. This is just the mean, if you like. This is just the mm-hmm. standard that Livingston are at.
Then just to finish off in the Livingston Rangers game, obviously deadline day looms upon us on Thursday. Do you think you'll hold on to Alfredo Fisher?
I would imagine so, unless stupid money comes in. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be the same. The only the kind of two players that have been linked to moving away have kind of been Morelos and Tavernier. And I don't, as I say, I think it would take stupid money. I expect Morelos to probably move on in the summer. And I would expect Gerrard to be given a large amount of the money that comes in for him to find his replacement.
Eight figures.
Or to fund. Or to fund his.
He didn't like that question today, did he?
No, he wasn't keen on it. I saw that on Twitter actually after it. I think it's just one of those things. He's been asked about Morelos that often that he probably just wants the window shut. But as I say, I think the board would be foolish to sell Morelos at this point anyway. As we're just talking about, I think if Morelos goes, then a large part of Rangers' potential title challenge goes with him. So as I say, I think it would take silly money for him to leave. As I fully anticipate he will go in the summer, but I think we'll hold on to pretty much everybody. I don't think we'll really bring anybody else in either.
What about yourself, Johnny? Could you see somebody swooping in for him in deadline day?
Nah, I think Morelos will set the season at Rangers. Just on that, you can see how important he is. I mean, I think sometimes his reputation goes before him in terms of being a bit of a loose cannon, but he's an absolutely fantastic footballer. I mean, he's one of the best strikers in the league, if not the best striker in the league. And his goal today, it's different quality, because the ball comes to him, and he's the most relaxed looking guy about. You're actually thinking, right, what's he doing here? Like, is he just... He almost walks up to the goalkeeper and just knocks it past him if he's playing a game of cuppy with his mates or something. You know, he's so relaxed. Just an incredible composure, a really good finisher. And obviously does have that side to him, but sometimes that's maybe overshadows what's most important, which is how sort of ridiculously talented that he actually is. And, you know, you forget his age sometimes as well. I think he's only 21?
22.
Yeah, so yeah, I think sometimes you forget that. He's younger than me.
He's younger than me as well, which is scary.
Sad that, isn't it?
Aye. That's the thing, just picking up on quickly what Johnny was saying about Morelos, and this is what I noticed today. I've obviously noticed it all season, but today in particular I think encapsulates just how much better a player Morelos has become since Gerrard and the coaching staff came in. I think last season, if he gets frustrated at those missed chances and he lets it get to him, but today he just kept going and going, and rightfully got his goal that was really well taken, really tight angle. He still got to finish it, and he does really, really well. And I think, just from what you hear, like talking to older Rangers fans and things like that, a striker that was obviously like that was McCoist. You know, he'd miss mm-hmm. half a dozen chances in a game, but he would always get his one, and he would never let the missed chances affect him. And I think you see that in Morelos this season. He doesn't let the chances get to him quite as much. And as Johnny said, cool as you like for his goal, and I thought he was fantastic. I thought the whole team was absolutely fantastic. Morelos, McCrory and Candeas in particular were all first class.
So, moving on to today's other Premiership clash, Hibs ended a week of turmoil with a flashy 3-1 victory over St Mirren. Eddie May took the side today, who we'll all remember, and the listeners all remember from his days at Falkirk a few years ago. Fisher, do you think Hibs' reaction today shows that the players were indeed revolting against Neil Lennon as expected?
It's a weird one, isn't it? You've seen it, obviously, the biggest example of this kind of thing is Man United down south.
Yeah.
You know, Mourinho's out the door, they've got somebody in that actually makes it a lot more enjoyable and a more enjoyable environment, and all of a sudden they're on a run of like seven wins or something like that. Not to suggest that Hibs will go and do anything like that, but I think you can maybe see that a bit of the the tension and atmosphere was lifted, and they were probably just told to obviously to go out there and play and be the kind of Hibs that we've expected them to be all season. So, and listen, as I said, we all know the kind of character that Neil Lennon is. Whether not to portray him in a negative sense, but there's a lot of, I'm trying to use the right words here, he's a very full on kind of guy. So you can imagine if that's turning into a negative with the players, that there is probably going to be a big release of tension when he's not in charge anymore. And I think you probably saw that with Hibs today.
Obviously, they came out all guns blazing at the start of the season, Johnny Hibs. You thought they were going to be right up there, top four. You thought Hibs would be up there maybe with Aberdeen, Kilmarnock at the moment. They were blowing teams away. They looked really good. They got Canberra back. There was a feel good about the place. What's happened there, Johnny? What do you think about them at the moment, Hibs?
Yeah, well, at the start of the season, I was Flo Canberry's biggest admirer, I think, and he's just, as you mentioned there, he's just completely gone off the boil. Probably not the right person to comment on today's match, because I actually went out at half time. So they were 1-0 down when I left, and they won 3-1. So not quite sure what happened, but the first half they were terrible. They were really, really poor in the first half, and St Mirren were well worthy of their 1-0 lead. Going into the break, I don't know what happened in the second half. I've obviously seen the highlights, and St Mirren actually, I think it was McAllister, should have probably put them 2-0 up when he was around Marciano, and obviously took his time too much. But I don't know, Lennon's a very difficult one, because I mean, you look at, he never ever ever had any problem motivating a team for 90 minutes against Celtic, Rangers or Aberdeen. Not at all. I mean, his last sort of five games in charge of Hibs, I think he took 5 points off Celtic and Rangers. So you can see that there was never any sort of problem against Celtic. I mean, beat Celtic at Easter Road in what was probably one of his best performances as a Hibs manager, and then two games against Rangers without defeat just after that. There's no problem there, but the fact that they were dropping so many points home to St Mirren, know whether the Motherwell performance in the week was maybe just the one that sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. I was trying to think of what I was going to say there. I was going to say the hay that broke the camel's back.
What you say about Neil Lennon, though, is quite interesting, that he gets the players up for the big games, because I suppose that's something that we saw that from him at Celtic as well. You know, the Champions League runs they had, the nights against Barcelona and the likes that he's famed for there. I mean, throughout the last two seasons of Neil Lennon's tenure at Celtic, certainly, they were pretty poor domestically at times, you know, so maybe that's just a sort of characteristic it has, that he can get the players up for the big games, but he sort of struggles with the week-in, week-out aspect of it, maybe.
Well, a good man motivator, and then maybe just not as good a coach as I don't know, as other Celtic managers of the last sort of decade.
Yeah, I definitely. Well, it was interesting that you said that you saw the first half, Johnny, because what I took away from that is that I thought Simeon Jackson looked really impressive for St Mirren. But then, of course, again, they seemed to sort of go weak at the knees when a victory looked like a possibility. Are they doomed for you?
Well, Simeon Jackson's an interesting one, because he's a guy that I've seen play in three leagues now. Obviously, he was at Norwich, wasn't he, in the Premier League, and he was quite a decent player. But he went out and played with Braunschweig in the Bundesliga as well. So he's a guy that's obviously played at a high level. Well, I mean, I think both those teams were relegated. But, you know what I mean? He's played in two of the top five leagues in Europe, and he's done well both times. So he's obviously got a good pedigree. I think today first half he looked confident. When the ball comes into him, the first one's a brilliant ball in from Brad Lyons. He just tucks it away simply, but he looked hungry after that, and that's the first kind of time I've seen him looking confident, looking full of beans. You know what I mean? I think if he can build his confidence and really get going, he's a player that does have the quality to make a big impact.
And then moving on to some of the action from Saturday, Celtic have come out swinging since the winter break, winning 3-3 of their games back in the Scottish Cup and the league. Hamilton, from what I heard and from what I saw, seemed to put in a really solid showing in the first half, limiting Celtic to little, staying strong, holding their lines, but ultimately, of course, they were on the wrong end of a 3-0 defeat, as teams so often are at Parkhead. Fisher, you're not like to admit it, but with Celtic bringing in the calibre of signings they have in January and looking to have hit a bit of form since they were away in Dubai it was, in the winter break.
Aye, Dubai.
Could you see them just completely pulling away now and just motoring towards number 8?
I'm not sure about that. Obviously, they've started the kind of second half of the season, if you like, really, really well. They've not, their run of fixtures at the moment, obviously they're not easy, but they're kind to Celtic, do you know what I mean? They've obviously, they've had Hamilton, St Mirren and Airdrieonians since, all at home, since coming back from the winter break. They've obviously got St Johnstone away next weekend, and then Hibs, which we were just talking about, we don't really know what kind of
St Johnstone in the middle of the week as well at home.
Yeah, and exactly. So I think they do look better. They look fresher. I think that's what will happen when you bring in new players, particularly new players that appear to have just hit the ground running, and Burke and Weir, which is good for them. I think they look a lot more energetic. There's a lot more of the kind of, from what I've seen, there's more of the kind of free flowing football that you associated them with Brendan Rodgers and the style he likes to play. So they certainly seem to have come out, as you say, all guns blazing. The fixtures, I think, have been quite kind to them, but these are the kind of games, obviously, that you need to win, and they're winning them comfortably and they're putting teams away. Be interesting to see when the harder games start to come back around how they cope. But I still think there's plenty of time left. I don't see them particularly tearing away just yet, but we'll need to wait and see. But as I say, fair play to them, because the players they've brought in, obviously the calibre of them is good, as much as it pains me to say it. And they look a lot better. They certainly look a lot better so far in January than they did last month.
It pains us all to see it, believe me. So another goal for Scott Sinclair yesterday. Obviously, he came up in Scotland before the Invincible season. He took the country by storm that year. He was scoring every week. He was absolutely tearing defences up. Since then, he's been a wee bit of a frustrating character for the Celtic fans. He seems to have lost his spark. Doesn't seem as confident taking people on. Obviously, I think that's 3 goals in 3 games for him now, isn't it? Or something along those lines since the winter break. Do you think we're starting to see him get back to his best, Johnny? Can he ever replicate that form from their Invincible season again?
Yeah, I think just before the winter break as well, he was playing quite well. So I think Sinclair, as you say, he's at the start of the season he was one, and even last season he was one. He wasn't at the top of his game. I think that was clear to see. I mean, this is a guy who was rumoured to be given an England call-up. So he was a little bit off his game, but he's, as you mentioned, he's back at it now. But I think just before the winter break, you'll remember he scored against Motherwell as well. So he's not been playing too badly. I think it's he's maybe similar to what I was saying about Simeon Jackson. He's quite a confidence player. Sinclair's, before he came to Celtic, he was pretty much a journeyman in England, and Brendan Rodgers got some fantastic results out of him, and obviously did well to actually keep him here, given that there was interest in him from massive clubs. But just Celtic as a whole, I think Fisher sort of put the hammer on the head of the nail when he said that's the kind run, I think is the way you described it. They've had pretty much what I would say is the perfect run. If they could have lined up 3 fixtures post that Rangers defeat just to get it completely out of their minds, they probably would have picked a home tie against a League One team and St Mirren and Hamilton at Celtic Park. It's no disrespect to the team that they're playing. Well, it kind of is. But, I mean, you couldn't have picked, as a Celtic manager, you've just lost to Rangers at Ibrox for the first time ever. He's ever lost it to Rangers, and you're thinking, right, what have we got next? A 3-week break, and then Hamilton, St Mirren and Airdrie at home. Fans back on side, forgotten about, Rangers lose to Killie. You know, it's a distant memory, that Old Firm game. But I'm interested about this St Johnstone thing. I mean, they play St Johnstone 3 times in 12 days.
Yeah.
I don't really remember. If a team plays each other that often, how often do you ever see one team win all three of them? No matter how
we had that
big
with Celtic,
a golfing standard.
We had that with Celtic last season. We had them three times in 7 or 8 days, I think. Of course, it was two. It was a Celtic 2-0 win in the cup final. They won 5-0 at Parkhead, and it was a one each draw during the week. So we had them in about 8 days, aye.
Is it how often would you, I just think St John's will take something from one of those games.
Yeah, you would like to think. You would like to think, wouldn't you, that they'd be able to suss them out enough to be able to at least get a point out of one of them.
Yeah, I thought
that was a brilliant turn of phrase you used there, Johnny, in the middle of that. What was it? A nail in the head of a hammer. I like that. running about four phrases together. Brilliant. anyway, onto Hamilton a wee bit now. Last week, we on the Bus Ball asked on Twitter whether Martin Cannon deserved the flak that he was taking. Usually, listeners might have seen that his dad seemed to come in for some stick-up at McDermott Park when they were out of the cup. He seems to be a Scottish football equivalent to Man Mite at the moment. Some people would have you know that keeping Hamilton up every single year, fairly free from danger, that's him, he's doing his job, deserves to stay. But then other people, mainly Hamilton fans, are saying, well, no, we should be looking to progress, try and make the top six eventually, and they're fed up with the football and they're looking for a bit more. So where do you fellas stand in this? I'll come to you first, Fisher.
I think it's difficult, and I think it could almost be like a glass ceiling effect with Hamilton. They've done tremendously well to stay in top flight for as long as they have done. They're always the kind of club that you're like, right, this has to be the year that they go down, and they always manage to get out of it. I think after a while, regardless of the size of club or who's in charge or what you've done, it becomes a what have you done for me lately kind of thing. And I just think that maybe in for Hamilton supporters, and it was really interesting reading that thread, it's almost as if Hamilton as a club have limited themselves because they're saying, well, you know, it's kind of just good to be here, and as long as we stay in the league and all that kind of stuff. But if you're a paying supporter, and fair play to Hamilton, obviously, because no disrespect, with the area they're in, obviously, really close to Glasgow, the folk that do go week in, week out deserve a lot of credit.
Aye, absolutely.
And I think if you're one of those supporters, then you probably are sick of you winning, what, one game every four, something like that. You know, staying up with the skin of your teeth and playing, let's be honest, fairly turgid football. You're looking at, especially this season as well, you're looking at a club like Livingston that have come up, weren't expected to come up, and have made an impact coming into the top flight. They're not an easy club or an easy team, sorry, to go to play home or away. They've had some really notable results, obviously beating Rangers, beating Hearts as well, taking a point off Celtic. So I can understand it. I think. I suppose there's two sides of it. You know, the grass might not always be greener. They could get rid of Cannon and bring somebody in, and they just sink. Or they bring somebody new in. It's a fresh approach. They've got, for the majority of the time they've been in the top flight, they've had good players. They just, you know, it just never seems to kind of come together. And they're always seen by the majority of teams as guaranteed points. So if you're a Hamilton supporter having to pay to watch that, it must get turgid. And it's probably, and obviously the abuse of Martin Cannon isn't great, and it's obviously especially not great if his dad's in the stands starting to offer folk out, you know what I mean? but I think I can completely understand where they're coming from. The guys that go week in and week out have watched this long enough, and they maybe just want to see the club progress and see where they can take themselves. And as I say, I think that probably coupled with the fact Livingston have come up and done so well, you look at a club like St Johnston that when they came up were fancied to kind of be relegation battlers, and they're now usually seen as one of the kind of definites in the top six almost. So I can completely understand it, and it was really, really interesting actually reading that thread and seeing the kind of common themes that were developing with the Hamilton supporters and why they were fed up.
I think that was interesting what you said there, Fisher, about Livingston. You know, I mean, Hamilton, that must have rubbed salt in the wounds a wee bit, that Hamilton have been slogging away at this for a few seasons, trying to steer clear of relegation. They've got Livingston, sick club of a similar size, kept doing a double promotion coming up, and then sort of waltzing up into the top six. You know, that must affect them quite a lot. What's your take on the situation, Johnny?
Yeah, I don't think it's even possible to argue with the amount of Hamilton fans that want Canning to go now. I think judging off the sort of question that we asked and the response that we got, And just by looking at the social media, it seems that 99.9% of Hamilton fans want change. And I think it's difficult to argue with them. The situation is, it doesn't look like it's going to get much better for Hamilton. It almost, I mean, they've got Dundee at home next. If they don't win that, I can see Cannon going. But it does just seem like a situation of, well, we're not last, so this is fine. But those three teams at the bottom, I mean, if Hamilton's objective this season is, or if they're basing how good Canning is doing off of, well, he's not as bad as Dundee and St Mirren, then he's going to look all right. But you got to take into account the style of football, the fact that they've scored 14 and 23, and that is abysmal. It's hard to judge off of this weekend. I mean, this isn't obviously based on a loss to Celtic in which they were, but it looks like it's quite unfortunate. Their keepers chucked two in and had a good day apart from that. But this has just been building up for a long time now. I remember in start of December, just looked at it there, they lost 4-0 to Dundee, and fans were saying, right, that's it for Canning. Since then, they've lost to Hibs, Rangers, Drone McKillie, lost to Hearts, lost to Motherwell, lost to St Johnstone, lost to Aberdeen, lost to Celtic. So, I mean, this isn't something that's just come out of nowhere. This has been building up for a long time, and I think it's kind of, as much as I liked Martin Cannon when we went, and he was good with us, when we went to Aki's for a day. Nice guy in that, but unfortunately, I think his time is up as Hamilton manager.
And to jump across Strathclyde Park and move on to the real result of the weekend, Motherwell have somehow recorded the third league win in a row with yesterday's 1-0 victory at Dens Park. I'll start with some of my own thoughts on it. It's funny how your opinion can completely sway in a week. I mean, I was sitting here last weekend and I was thinking, oh, after we've been put out from Ross County in the Cup, and you're thinking, oh, we could very easily be dragged into a relegation battle here because they were looking terrible. Ross McCormick could come in, hooked at half time. He was meant to be a sort of white knight, if you like. He'd looked really poor. And then we sort of landed in this team during the week against Hibs. It seemed almost sort of cobbled together. Players that haven't really been playing. Alex Rodriguez-Gorans came back into the team. Peter Hartley, Carol McHugh, Danny Johnson, sort of heavyweights, if you like, at Motherwell like that, have dropped out. And it's looked a hell of a lot better, to be honest. If you look at it all on paper, our strongest players are on the bench. But I tell you something, it's the best we've looked all season. Goran's barely had a look in. He's been brilliant in there. He's not much of a goal scorer, but he's assisting if they're brilliant. Liam Grimshaw's looked like an absolute powerhouse at right back. Moving Charles Dunn into centre half has been really, really good. Unfortunately, Curtis Main up front still frustrates. He's not scored in quite a wee while. He seems to be sort of snatching at chances, which is a few up at Dundee that, you know, we should have done a lot better with. But I think we'll take where we are at the moment with a hard game against Livingston coming next. I think we maybe get a wee bit fortunate at times at Dundee yesterday. I think they were pressing us for a lot of the game and we were hanging in at times. But nevertheless, there's been a lot of games this season where it's us that have been on the upper hand and teams have done that to us. So I suppose you've got to take that. It swings and roundabouts, isn't it? You take them and they come for you, and you've got to accept that it happens to you sometimes. So no, all credit to Stephen Robinson. I would have given him a bit of stick myself after that Ross County game, to be honest, because the team looked absolutely lethargic. And then I was expecting nothing from Hibs during the week, and they went, and yeah, Hibs were poor, but it's still a decent enough team, you know. He's answered some of his questions. He's not been scared to drop the captain, Peter Hartley, and the vice captain, if you like, Carol McHugh as well. So yeah, things are maybe starting to look up. We have been here before. We got a couple of results about September time, and you thought, oh, this will be a turning. So we'll see. Hopefully they can keep it up this time. We're in a wee bit of a situation, I think, where we're a wee bit comfortable for relegation. Like, we'll probably not. I cross my fingers, but I would hope that we're not going to be sucked into anything down there now, but then we seem quite a way off the top six. So, yeah, but considering the fact last week I had as certainties to be dragged into a relegation battle, I think I'll take our current situation. But, Johnny, I know you're in and about Dundee quite a wee bit, doing your programme work. Is it inconsistency? Because when I watch them, the highlights and things against us, it really looked, I know they do have strikers, but it really looked to me as if they were lacking like a really good striker, if you like.
Well, I think Andy Nelson could be could be their man. He obviously signed from Sunderland. He scored, I think, 5 and 6 at Gateshead when he was there on loan. So he's come up, previously played for Falkirk, and the fans loved him at Falkirk. There was a few jealous Bairns wanting him back at Falkirk Stadium, I'll tell you that. But he'll go up, and I think he'll do quite well there. He scored against Hearts in his debut. From watching the highlights, he actually had a couple of chances but dragged a few wide against Motherwell at the weekend, but I think that'll come. But as you say, that's what's been missing for them this season, Motherwell, and well, not just this season, last season as well. Under McCann, they would dominate games and just could not put the ball in the net, and it's got to be extremely frustrating for a group of fans that have been watching Sofian Moussa, Fasil El Bakhtawi, who was, in my opinion, a very good championship player, but just couldn't cut it at the top level in Scotland. Simon Murray, Kalman's hardly got off the mark in terms of goals, so they are desperate for someone to come in and, as you say, finish off any sort of positive moves that they have, and there's been plenty of them. It's just, and I think at the start of the season as well, under McCann, and even last season when I was at Dens Park, and the fans just didn't seem to take to the way that he was playing at all. I think he had the right intentions, McCann, the way he tried to play football. It'd be similar to the way I would try and play football if I was a manager, no positive attacking football, but the way he played out from the back was a bomb scare, to be fair, at times. And they just, the players were obviously not at the standard to play like that. I think McIntyre's a better manager than McCann, and I think Dundee will improve post-January with the signs that they've made. Obviously not Andrew Davis, given that he broke his foot about 3 minutes after walking. Yeah, I mean, that just sort of epitomises their season, really. Yeah, I mean, you sign a boy, very reasonable reputation in Scottish football from his time with County, and he walks through the door and breaks his foot on the way in.
And that's what you say, isn't it? When you're down there, that's the kind of things that go against you, you know?
Right.
Obviously, they've definitely improved a wee bit under Jim McIntyre. Is it just inconsistency that's killing them just now, do you think? Because we saw, obviously, during the week they went to Hearts, got a right good result. I was sitting there at Fir Park, couldn't believe it, to be honest. I thought all my Christmases had come at once, and we were beating Hibs, and then I look and I'm saying, oh God, Dundee are winning as well. So they've shown that they can get a good result. Is it just inconsistency, do you think?
I wouldn't even say it's inconsistency. I think they've been pretty terrible the entire season, but that win at Hearts is probably the one that's sort of come out of the blue, and I think if you asked Hearts fans, that's probably, if I've seen a few of them saying that that's the worst that they've seen Hearts play for a long time. I don't think you can really describe them as inconsistent. They're just, I do think things will improve, but since, I don't even know how many wins McIntyre's got. I think maybe that was only his third win or something since coming in. Looking at it now, yeah, they've only won 3 games since the Betfred Cup. Aki's away, Aki's at home, and then that win at Hearts. It's just, you just look at that squad and you just think now, after January, it just has to improve. But the bottom three, as I say, this is going to be, I don't remember a league like this. And they actually go to Hamilton next, Dundee, as I said earlier. So it's going to be, that's going to be huge, and that'll be telling. I wouldn't be too surprised with finishing a draw, to be fair.
And then Fisher, obviously, Motherwell find themselves, as I was saying, in that awkward position, sort of trapped between relegation and fighting for anything better. Miles off the top six. Also, they're a team that have been a foil for your boys quite a few times, obviously, last season, the semi-final, and then the 3-2 draw earlier this year. Forget about the 7-1 at Ibrox, that doesn't count. In your opinion, have they started producing the goods a wee bit too late to make any sort of impact in the table?
You probably think so. I mean, the kind of the top 3 or 4 as it is, I think that probably the only, I think it'll be the same, obviously, 4 teams in there. That just might change position wise throughout the season. I think your top 6 will be made. I mean, there's 7 points between Livingston in 7th and St Johnstone in 6th. So I think the top 6, the teams in the top 6 are fairly secure, I would imagine. I think Livingston will improve again towards the end of the season, but I don't think they're going to make up 7 points on St Johnstone, who are fairly consistent. Motherwell, I think, are safe. You can't really see Hamilton, Dundee, and especially Dundee and St Mirren making up that kind of points gap on Motherwell. And similarly, you probably can't see Motherwell dropping as many points. I think they just need to kind of keep pushing and see how high they can finish. But I would be very, very surprised if they get anywhere near, you know, seriously competing for the top six. As we say, we're coming out of January at the moment. There's teams obviously fighting for Europe and things like that. I'd probably agree with you, Lewis. I think Motherwell have just left it too late, but they have improved recently, as you mentioned, and as I don't think there's any. I just think it's, unfortunately for you, Lewis, I think it's just going to be a bit of a nothing season.
Aye.
Safe, but not really pushing any further up the table.
I know, you wonder why we do it, don't you? But anyway, now, it should have been Pittodrie for Thrills yesterday. I think we would all have called that because of the obvious needle between two clubs regarding the Greg Stewart situation. It didn't quite come to fruition. The game finished 0-0, and when I was listening to updates from that on the radio, they were bringing out all the usual cliches about hard-fought tactical encounters and everything just to basically cover the fact that it was absolutely shite. So it's a tough one to call, isn't it, Johnny? Who's going to be more pleased or disappointed with a sort of bored draw from that game?
Oh, I think Killie will definitely be the more pleased. You can tell that by the way they've gone there and set up. Well, they've set up for a point. They've not had a shot. You would never know that Killie were above Aberdeen the table. They're going there, and obviously it's a good point for them. But to not even lay a glove on Aberdeen, well, apart from laying Chris Boyd's size 12s on Shinny's ankle, they've not, you know, they've not hurt Aberdeen at all. Judging by what I've seen,
I think over dramatising the Boyd challenge there.
Oh, it's a shocker, but we'll come to that later. I think
the Aberdeen apologist strikes again.
The only thing that you can say about the Greg Stewart derby was that at least he was kind of the main man. He's obviously had an effort just go wide in the second half, and that's about enough to make him the star of the highlights reel.
I'd have preferred the main man to score, to be honest.
I know, but I just looked like an absolutely turgid game, and that's what I've heard from people that were unfortunate enough to have gone to that one as well. But I definitely think Killie will be the happier side. It's 4 points from Aberdeen away and Rangers at home. I mean, it's terrific for them, and it's a great start to January, through the cup as well, obviously. So I think Killie will be delighted, but I was a bit surprised, to be fair, that they've gone there and had such little impact on Aberdeen.
One of our resident Aberdeen fans, Ryan Cromby, was a wee sunny himself watching Atletico Madrid this weekend, so I think it's fair to say he's picked a good game to miss. There's been a lot of talk about Kilmarnock because they're still up there, they're only a couple of points behind, maybe doing a Leicester this season and possibly winning the league. They certainly look a wee bit like they've got that sort of momentum about them. But then I think we all like to sort of forget the fact that Aberdeen are actually just 5 points off top as well. They've maybe not been just as stylish as the likes of Kilmarnock, but they're still right up there as they always are. Is it wrong to write them off, Fisher, do you think?
No, I wouldn't. I think I'm getting myself mixed up here, sorry. Yes, it would be wrong to write Aberdeen off. We've seen over the past two seasons, particularly, unfortunately, with Rangers. You know, people are saying, right, this will be the season that the Rangers will take second, and Aberdeen have obviously pipped them to it and have done really well in doing so. So I think it would be foolish to write them off. I think they've probably been a bit overshadowed with just how well Kilmarnock have been doing, because if you look at it, where Aberdeen are just now is where you would have expected them to be at the start of the season. So Aberdeen, again, are having a very kind of consistent season in line with where they've been the past couple of years. Obviously, the supporters would want them to be pushing on and maybe a bit closer to the very top, but they still are doing very, very well. I think they'll be disappointed that they couldn't take advantage of Kilmarnock obviously setting up rather defensively yesterday, and then obviously we're having the extra man, albeit for only kind of 10 minutes sort of thing. But Aberdeen are always a dangerous team. They've got good players. Greg Stewart coming in is a really good addition. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think that top four is, the four teams in that top four is how it will finish. I think the order obviously will change. But I think Aberdeen will continue to be right up there.
So aye, a match all round, I think, that probably didn't live up to the billing that we'd all given it beforehand. Whereas I don't think that there's anybody out there that have predicted Hearts versus St Johnstone to have been a classic. Even if St Johnstone didn't turn it on, Hearts certainly did after a disappointing midweek performance against Dundee that we just touched on. Callum Morrison and Marcus Godinho got on the score sheet for Hearts. Johnny, Callum Morrison's a young player that always impresses me when I watch him. He's full of energy, and I've seen Hearts before without him. I think they played their semi-final against Celtic earlier in the season. They didn't have him in the team. They never look the same without him. How impressed are you with him as a young player?
Yeah, Callum Morrison's one that I've watched quite a lot coming through when he was on loan with Stirling Albion in League 2. And he was always one that stood out when I went and watched Stirling. You could see that he was a level above the sort of standard that he was playing at in League 2. But to sort of see him go straight back into that Hearts team and make an impression, I admit I was surprised. Because, I mean, if you take, for example, Morrison was playing at Stirling and, as I say, he was clearly the best player in the squad. But you had the same situation at Stenhouse Muir, where Harry Payton was clearly the best player. And I thought that Harry Payton was a better player than Callum Morrison. But it just sort of shows there's obviously a big mental side to football as well, and breaking at that squad. Although Levine does give youngsters a good chance, it was never going to be easy, and he's done brilliantly to break into a squad, let's say, that Harry Payton couldn't do. It speaks volumes that he was back on loan at Stenhouse Muir this summer, in summer until January, and now he's back sort of trying to break into Ross County squad in the Championship, and Morrison's doing the business for Hearts in the top flight. I think he's, as you say, he's been really good for them. I think that was actually his first Hearts goal, so that might give him an even bigger boost going forward. So yeah, they're a very impressive young player, and I think that's something that Levine doesn't really get credit for. He does sort of bring through a lot of youngsters, although at times you do kind of think he just plays a ridiculous amount to sort of cover his back. I mean, there was Hearts fans saying that last season, does he just play youngsters? So when people say, well, Hearts are shite, he can just sort of point his finger at, yeah, but we're playing loads of youngsters. But I mean, on the counter of that would be sort of like some Morrison who's doing really well.
So just while we're on the topic of Craig Levein there, he's been in a lot of the headlines again this week. He's had this ongoing conflict with Michael Stewart throughout the week that we've all seen. It all started Michael Stewart, the wee bit of a dig at Craig Levein. It was either in Sports Sound or Sports Scene, I can't remember. Craig Levein got back, sort of retaliated at Stewart, saying that he wasn't intelligent enough or brave enough to try his hand at management. And then Michael Stewart got back at that again, accusing Craig Levein of trying to make him be sacked from his punditry job. It all seems a wee bit like a sort of playground fight, doesn't it? It's a bit of tit for tat. What about yourself, Fisher? Do you think this is kind of good patter, or is it just petulant between the two of them?
No, I'm fully on board the Craig Levein no fucks tour that he's on and has been on for the best part of a year. I think he's good value, to be honest. He's somebody that really can't quite take Michael Stewart seriously. I just think he's one of these guys that likes to try and make himself sound more intelligent than he actually is. When in reality he doesn't actually say an awful lot. If you listen to his punditry, he doesn't really, in my opinion, doesn't really add. To be fair, neither him nor Stephen Thompson do that on Sports Scene. They don't really add anything. They don't really make you think differently about what you've watched. They're just basically telling you what's right in front of you. And as somebody that disagrees with a lot of what Michael Stewart comes away with, I must admit I did laugh when I read Craig Levein's comments. And I think Levein is good value, to be honest with you.
Tommy Wright's criticised St Johnstone for failing to do the basics in yesterday's defeat. They've won 6 games away in the trot before yesterday's game, so a lot of folk would have backed them before getting into that. Could you say that they were probably just due a defeat, Johnny?
Yeah, I think it's St Johnstone, another team that didn't have a shot on target. They actually did shoot, but they didn't get anything on target. It's a difficult one. I mean, I wouldn't have fancied Hearts to win that yesterday, to be fair. Looking at it, before the game started. I thought St Johnstone will go there and get something. They're in really good form. They just simply do not concede goals, St Johnstone. That's ended a run of four clean sheets and a bounce. And Tommy Wright's had them drilled perfectly this season, and I think Matty Kennedy and Watt up top have both been brilliant. So I was surprised, to be fair, by what I saw. And I think Tommy Wright's come out and he's been completely honest. He's said, right, that was pretty poor. That was poor. I've told the players that was poor. I'll tell yous that was poor. Not mm-hmm. good enough. It will be better next week. And it's just, I suppose it is just one of those games, like you say. It's not going to end any seasons, and St Johnstone will be, I think, going into this triple header with Celtic. I still am convinced they'll get something from at least one of the games with Celtic in the league. And they've got Aki's as well in there. So, difficult run of fixtures coming up for St Johnstone. But I can still see very, very positive things coming this season. And another top six finish, which is a huge credit to St Johnstone.
Tony Watt started the game and was subbed off yesterday. Fisher, we all know the pedigree he has, but he's done it at Celtic. He's sort of bobbed about a wee bit since, never really got settled anywhere. He definitely had a sort of blistering start to the season at St Johnstone. Is he a player you're keen on?
Well, he played for Celtic, so that'll be a no. but no, I'm joking.
Asking you objectively, Fisher, objectively.
No, I think, obviously, he did have a really good start with St Johnstone, and as you say, it's kind of tailed off a little bit. There was a kind of spell just in the first kind of quarter of the season where people were saying, obviously, a lot of what St Johnstone were doing well was coming through Tony Watt. He just never seems to be able to kind of get settled anywhere and put in a consistent, you know, have like a good season, if you like, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's always in kind of fits and starts, but part of me just kind of thinks that that's the level that he's at. You know, if you're a St Johnstone, you're not going to really get, it's kind of once in a blue moon, you're going to get like a really consistent striker that will deliver you know, 12 to 15 goals per season. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, you Motherwell had it with Louis Moult recently, but aye. Then you then need to wait a while for somebody like that to come along again. So I do think he's a good player, don't get me wrong. He's obviously shown when he was at Celtic and down south that at times he is a good player. Even at Hearts, for a spell, you know, it was kind of similar to what he went through at St Johnstone. People were saying that, you know, he'd kicked on and he'd improved and then he tailed off again. So I definitely think he's a good player. I just think it's potentially just the way it's meant to be, that it kind of, it's fits and starts.
So that sort of rounds up the Scottish Premiership for another week. In the Championship, Ross County sprung back to the top of the league with a 2-0 victory over Arlo Athletic. Bottom side Falkirk got a hard fought 2-2 draw at home to Carlow Thistle. Sean Rooney, a local boy to me, got the opener for Carlow Thistle. Well done, Sean. Jonathan Johansson's green at Morton and Dunfermline played out a 0-0 draw. But what jumped out for me about the Championship this weekend was Partick's 2-1 victory against Queen of the South. They're unbeaten now in 2019 so far. Has Gary Caldwell started to sort of turn the good ship Mary Hall around, Fisher, do you think?
It's a difficult one, because it's one of those things, kind of recently, there was folk even talking about Caldwell losing his job and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a really good result for Partick. They're in a false position, in my opinion, with the squad they've got. They should be nowhere near the kind of bottom of the table. And obviously, a lot of kind of, because Caldwell was brought in after the summer, but before January, I think a lot of it was kind of judge him after January, and they seem to be starting to kick on a little bit just now. So I think Partick, it's a difficult one because you've got Falkirk down there as well, and you've had people kind of all season saying, you know, Falkirk will get there, they'll turn it around, wait till January, give McKinnon the transfer window to bring his own players in, which obviously they have done, because you still can't really see either, you know, or really believe that one of Partick or Falkirk could automatically go down.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be more expecting Partick to kick on and get out of trouble than I would Falkirk. So, and I think Caldwell's proven that he is a decent enough manager for that level, and obviously a good win yesterday over Queen of the South.
He certainly brought in quite a lot of players in January, Gary Caldwell. He seems to be a man with a plan. We'd seen quite a lot of strong quotes out of him in some of their defeats running up to Christmas about how no player can be guaranteed mm-hmm. that they're going to stay at Partick and that he needs players that roll their sleeves up and all the rest of it. To be fair to him, he's gone out, he's signed an army full. What do you think of them getting into the second half of the year, Johnny?
I think it's quite important not to get too carried away with this win. I think the Queen of the South are extremely inconsistent. They've not lost this year. They've had a 1-1 draw at home with Falkirk, which was, I think, fans were pretty upset about. They've sold Chris Erskine to Livingston, one which doesn't really make much sense to me. It makes good sense from a Livingston point of view because it's a great signing for them. And then they've still got this ongoing Koulibaly situation where this guy's just not playing. He played 6 minutes against Stranraer and he's just not been picked by Caldwell since, I think, the Ayr match. So he's not playing a long time. I find Caldwell confusing, to be honest. That's the way I describe it just now. And I think it's huge that they have won that game against Queen of the South because they go away. Now, the five of their next six are away, and they've got, well, one of those is in the cup, but they've only picked up 2 points away from home this whole season. So I think those next games coming up will be extremely telling for Caldwell. I would actually disagree with Fisher as well. I think Falkirk are more likely to pull away from the bottom of the table than Thistle. I'd put my money on Falkirk right now if I had to.
Then the tale of the day in League One, I would say, has to be Arbroath's 2-0 defeat against Forfa. A shock result, even though I'd somehow, in a rush, to be honest, that I predicted it in a prediction league that we do. I was surprised not to see Arbroath score, though. It seems to me, Johnny, as if, you know, you always see Bobby Lynn getting a goal every single week there, so I was surprised not to see them get on the score sheet.
Yeah, I think it's only the second time they've not scored this season, both at home. I think they've not lost away from home all season. So weird that their trouble seemed to be coming at home. I think that's a loss to Forfar and a loss to Raith. I mean, if you can call that trouble. But Arbroath have been absolutely outstanding this season, and they'll have looked over the result just down the road at Glebe Park and seen Brechin that had beaten Raith. It's 13 points still is the gap for Arbroath over Raith, who are the clear favourites for the title at the start of the season. It's an absolutely brilliant day for Arbroath, and not a brilliant day, obviously, a brilliant result at Glebe Park for Arbroath, and one that will leave Raith actually kind of looking over their shoulders. I think they've Airdrie and Montrose have both failed to win, but they're only a point ahead of East Fife, and that's an indignity for Raith. The fact that they're only 1 point ahead. Not only are they a tier below Dunfermline, but a point ahead at East Fife, who are obviously their part-time neighbours. It's not great for Raith, and I've seen a few fans complaining they want a younger manager in with fresh ideas, but they're already on their second manager of the season, and then John McGlynn. So it's a very difficult time
guy, though, John McGlynn, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. As we expect,
likeable character.
He's not quite Dick Campbell.
No, he is not. We're spoiled for choice in the law leagues, aren't we? Elsewhere in League One, Brechin City beat Raith Rovers 2-1. Jim Duffy's Dumbarton and Montrose played out a 1-1 draw. Stenny beat Airdrie 1-0, and Stranraer came out on top in a 4-3 7-goal thriller against East Fife. In
East League Fife two, came out on top.
What's that?
You mean East Fife 1-4?
Did I get that the wrong way around, have I?
Aye.
Anyway, in League 2, no shock as Albion Rovers were scudded 5-0 by Kevin Rukovic's Stirling Albion. I'm regretting saying that now. Rukovic has really got them swinging, Johnny, hasn't he?
Oh, they've been brilliant. Stirling Albion are my pick to make the playoffs. I did say that before Annan smashed Peterhead 3-0 on Saturday. So I'm looking at that. And it's going to be between those two. I've been to Elgin enough times this season to tell you that they won't be finishing fourth place, and there's obviously only the one place up for grabs. It's a really interesting playoff battle, but the teams at the bottom of that league, I know you'll come on to Berwick in a minute, but just discouraging. The only thing that they're thankful for is that Albion Rovers are in that league, because this, I mean, I'm lost for words. Are them getting beat 7-1 by? I actually backed them to win against Queen's Park, and they've gone.
They're sitting right next to each other in the league as well, aren't they? So it was a big surprise.
I know. I mean, Queen's Park, I think that's their first win in about 10 games or something.
Mm-hmm.
If not more.
Aye, so elsewhere, obviously leaders Edinburgh City played out a thrilling 3-3 draw at Elgin. Queen's Park thumped fellow strugglers Berwick Rangers, as we've just been discussing there, and Annan recorded a 3-0 victory over Peterhead. I was looking at quotes and McAnally certainly wasn't happy after that one. Clyde beat Cowdenbeath, with the winner coming from an unlikely source in Ray Grant, who, as far as I'm aware from my limited research, admittedly, has never scored a goal in his senior career before. And now we have a question from Lee, a listener. We've got one question tonight, so thanks very much for sending that in. Hello, Lee. He's asked you both, who will be the four teams involved in the Premiership playoffs at the end of the season, as it's pretty tight at the bottom and top of both respective leagues?
Want me to start?
Just to get you thinking.
I will say it'll be St Mirren finishing 11th, and then I will say Dundee United, Ayr United, and Inverness.
Difficult to disagree with that, to be fair. I think St Mirren are going straight down. Say Dundee.
Hamilton are staying Dundee. Up, are they?
They always do.
Aye, they always fucking stay up.
You'd be stupid to bet against them, to be honest.
Aye, sorry, no offence, I'm not a they are a pain in the arse. But so Dundee, Dundee United, Ayr, and I'll go Cali, with County obviously winning the championship.
We've got another couple of questions, by the way. One's just come in 5 minutes ago, and there's one from Ian McLean.
Oh, was that the one? Was that not the one about Clyde that he sent in?
Aye, how did Ray Grant manage to get into a scoring position?
That's obviously why I put that in, Johnny, you see. that's why I put that wee bit in. I'm a step ahead of the game at all times. I just thought I'd steal his question and insert it as my own dubious knowledge. You got another one there, did you say?
Yeah, when will Rangers fans have another pitch invasion? Will it be after scoring a last minute equaliser against Cowdenbeath to force a replay?
Aye.
That's a good part of that. That's almost as good. Well, aye, exactly. So he's an inner member, so I'm allowed to slag him off even more.
Did you buy into that pitch invasion today, Fisher? No.
Huh?
Did you buy into that pitch invasion today?
To be honest, it was about, it looked like 100 folk in the park or something. Like, it got a bit ridiculous, right? But I just feel like every time Rangers do anything, it's like, oh, folk just need to talk about it. Like, it's just as soon as you see it in our group chat as well, it's just, I'm going to call him out, Matt Finlay, with just that shite RC Rangers of winning the Champions League. Again, just fuck off and think of something more original.
Right, I don't want to be the celebration police, right? And I'm all for just people having a great time on a football day out, getting pissed and running on the park, right? I'm the first advocate of that. But why do you go on the park for the third goal? I can understand if it's like if it's to put you 1-0 up, but at what point does the third goal warrant a pitch invasion and a comfortable victory?
I know what you mean. It's usually an outpour of triumph in it that you would know when the game is that.
Just a bizarre one.
I don't know if it's just because Morelos was slightly obviously Ryan Jacks was up the other end.
Aye.
And then, which obviously there was still Rangers fans there, but, and then Kent's, he kind of wheels away to the side, and then Morelos kind of runs towards the fans, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is it's Alfredo's fault?
Well, everything else is, so, do you know what I mean?
You never know. This time next week, he might not even be here. You never know.
Don't say such things like that. My heart can't take it.
Well, I think that'll do us for this week. Thanks, Johnny. Thanks as ever for joining us, rather.
Pleasure, Lewis. It's been a pleasure. You've done a fantastic job hosting.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Al. I look forward to hearing it back and sitting cringing all the way. And Fisher, as always, it's always a pleasure, never a trot.
That's fantastic. Really enjoyed it. You're my favourite Lewis out of all the Lewises I know, so it was great to talk to you, and you, Johnny, as well.
How many Lewises do you want Fisher at interest?
I know you and Kemp and like one other Lewis.
Oh, there you go. I'm above Kemp. Yeah. That'll do me.
Aye, it's hard. It would be difficult not to be above Kemp, to be fair.
Sweet.
Given his allegiances.
So that brings this edition of Busball to a close. My thanks to our contributors and everybody for tuning in. Remember that we're now on Spotify, so it's easier to listen in. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.